Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B minus or a C plus life, because when you're living a B or B plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Just devastating news from Susie Jones live on the scene and Laura Oakes. What a just outrageous tragedy to have an 11-year-old boy gunned down. How did it happen? What happened? Lots of questions still about that, but my goodness, if we all don't take a moment and think about who we are as a people, where we are as a city. You had an 11-year-old getting killed at a park in broad daylight on a summer day. I don't know, man. I don't know. We need to do better for our young people, that they're not in these situations, and we need to send a message that people who use guns and use violence are not going to be coddled, that justice will be swift. And I hope we find the shooter or shooters, whatever the case may be. But to have this going on at the middle of the afternoon on a Monday, the first Monday of summer, it is not a good way to get this summer started, I'll tell you that much. Let's get you up to date on some other stories that have my attention. It is the D Rush Hour News Headlines, the lead. And I want to start with some breaking news about the University of St. Thomas. Just this afternoon, the school announced that they are officially a Division I school. St. Thomas, as you know, left the MIAC and left Division III in 2021. And they've been competing at the Division I level, but not able to fully be a D1 school because it was in a five-year provisionary period. So the basketball team could have won their way into the NCAA tournament, into March Madness, but they were not eligible to compete in postseason play. That has changed. The NCAA in January shortened the transition period for the rare schools that are reclassified from 5 to 4 years. St. Thomas's athletic director, Phil Esten, said this is an historic day for the University of St. Thomas and Tommy's athletics. So here we go. This could be the first season that you see the University of St. Thomas in March Madness, maybe in some football action as well. But they are the first Division I member to be reclassified without making that stop, going from D3 to D2 to D1. They went right from 3 to 1. Next story that I am monitoring in the lead is an update on the social media site Threads that came from the wife of State Senator John Hoffman. Because all we really know at this point about what happened in the early morning hours a week ago Saturday, when a politically motivated assassin went from one house, the Hoffmans in Champlin, to a state representative's house in Maple Grove, to another state senator's house in New Hope, and ultimately to Representative Melissa Hortman's house in Brooklyn Park. We know some of what happened from an FBI affidavit. But over the weekend, Yvette Hoffman wrote this: "Our daughter Hope was lined up with John and myself execution style. We were all together in our entryway in a row with our hands on top of our heads, our hands up. Hope may not have gotten shot because of all the commotion, but she was front and center with us. And after we were incapacitated, she knew to go lock the door and call police and inform them that her mom and her dad, who was a state senator, were all shot." pretty incredible statement of what happened. And just, you try not to let your head visualize that moment, right? But you think of this state senator, his wife who works at an elementary school in Maple Grove, and their adult daughter lined up thinking that they were all going to die. This afternoon, all of them are alive. Hope is a hero. She really is. Because having the presence of mind to be able to tell police that this was a state senator's house got the whole ball rolling with other law enforcement agencies going to check on their representatives. Our third story in the lead takes us to the airport. Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. World class. I think all of us feel that way when we go there. It's a great place to fly out of. As the crowd cheers, a little bit of batting practice, the ball being thrown to some kids out here. Whether you're traveling with kids or you're traveling with someone with dementia, Phil Burke is the Assistant Director of Customer Service for the Airport Commission. He joins us talking a little bit about some of the massive changes that they have made. And Phil, we all are touched by this. We all likely know someone who has to deal with challenges, disabilities, or dementia at the airport.
Yeah, I mean, you probably couldn't go too far with anybody that isn't touched in some way by somebody with dementia. So, you know, we have about 100,000 people that come through our airport every single day. And so we know that they show up with varying needs that that we need to respond to.
As you guys have looked at this in ways to make the airport more friendly for people with dementia or people with other challenges, are there things that surprised you, things that you never even thought about where you're like, oh, we can fix that?
Well, you know, it's amazing that I get the answer is yes. I mean, people that have approached us with different needs, you know, and one of them is a good example is dementia, where we had an advocate, a local advocate, come to me and share the story and wanting to be involved with us, with our disability advisory committee here. And, you know, it's just another example of we just don't realize how many different needs are out there and then people that are traveling with those needs. So I guess I'm never not surprised.
Yeah. Phil Burke is the Assistant Director for Customer Experience at MSP International Airport. So some of the specifics that you've done are you know, include like better signage, adult changing rooms. And tell me about the sunflower lanyard. I've started to see this at a number of airports all around the country.
Yeah, that is a great program. It originated over in Europe. And has been slowly making its way over to North American airports and really other North American businesses. And what it is it gives somebody with a hidden disability the opportunity to self-declare that, you know, they have that hidden disability. And that alerts our staff here at the airport that that person needs a little more support, a little more help, a little more patience. And, we've given away thousands of those lanyards to interested parties, and we see people wearing them every day, and that's great. And, you know, the training for our airport staff is pretty simple. Like I said, when somebody sees another person wearing that lanyard, you just approach and say, I see you're wearing the lanyard. Is there anything I can do to give you a little bit of help? And then we go from there.
Phil, what I think is so cool about this is a lot of these ideas have come from volunteers or advocates. And, you know, you're the airport, man. Like you, every single person that goes through that airport has an idea of what they would want to make things better
right.
for them. The openness right. that our airport has had to these advocates and to making these changes to me is really, it's really inspiring and really impressive.
Well, thank you for that. And, you know, we have learned, whether it's through design or operations, that we're not necessarily the experts on certain things. And certainly when it comes to accessibility, we know that there are people out there with a lived experience that that are the experts. And so we've just embraced that really on a daily basis and getting that feedback from those with the lived experience so that we can make it, a better experience for everybody.
Really important, really significant. And thank you and the airport for everything you guys are doing to make it. If you brighten the day just a little bit, you make the process a little easier for people who have enough to struggle with, to be honest. I think that's a win for all of us.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, that's what we found is that, when we design for accessibility, in so many cases, everybody wins.
Phil Burke, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Pretty cool stuff out at the airport. We are live at Target Field as we get ready for pregame here on the home of the Twins, News Talk 830 WCCO. The youth baseball players are out in full force here.
And they're getting after it as Seattle takes batting practice.
They are definitely trying to get the Seattle players to throw a ball out. It's pretty fun.
That's great.
It is very rowdy out here in the outfield, for sure. We're going to do page two of the D Rush Hour news headlines in just a minute. It is an end of decades of local ownership for the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Lynx. Would you move somewhere because they were paying you, getting paid to move? And big, little weddings. All of that when we come back. I got to tell you, we got some sort of youth baseball night happening here at Target Field, and there are hundreds of kids trying to shag these fly balls in the outfield. It's pretty amazing. Like, the joy. If you get a ball at a game, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool, and all these kids are in their uniforms and pretty fun. I got some Edina Hornets behind me. Pretty good stuff here. Let's get you up to date on the D Rush Hour news headlines. And I want to start with the news about the ownership of the Minnesota Timberwolves. It is almost the end of decades of local ownership of the Timberwolves and the Lynx.
Edwards will drive into the lane.
Chris Hine in the Star Tribune reporting that tomorrow the NBA Board of Governors is expected to vote to approve a deal which would transfer ownership from Glenn Taylor to the Mark Lowry, Alex Rodriguez group. Glenn Taylor and Becky Taylor took out a full-page newspaper ad in the Minnesota Star Tribune, which they also own, to say their time as owners has come to a close. A league source telling Chris, Board of Governors approval likely tomorrow. Approval means 23 of the 30 owners at least say okay. The price looks like a bargain, $1.5 billion, but that was agreed upon in 2021. Imagine that. It's been 4 years. Hit a snag last year. Taylor tried to cancel it. Went to arbitration. Taylor lost. Lowry and Rodriguez will get the team. Recently, the team has been valued at $3 billion, one of the lowest in the NBA, but still, pretty crazy. You think Harv and Marv bought that team originally. Glenn bought it for $94 million in 1994. As part of the deal, he does keep his courtside seats. And if he would like to loan them out, courtside is always ready to take them. Would you take money to move? This was so interesting. CNBC reporting that there are a number of states, cities, and towns all over the United States that are saying, yeah, well, you know what? If you move from California or New York or Texas or Florida, we will throw in a little something. Pretty wild. There's a company called Make My Move, and you can use that to look up some of the cities that are offering that out. Micro weddings. Who in Minnesota should try to hire people, by the way? Cook, where in Minnesota would they have to pay you to get you to live there? Go ahead. Take a dump on one of our great Minnesota cities.
Oh, I love all this communities.
You can't even imagine.
Minnesota are great.
I'm certain there are some cities that would have to pay you.
I can't imagine why you would suggest such a thing.
Maybe Edina.
They could afford it.
micro weddings. Micro weddings are big. Axios saying that when you look at the number of people who are going to weddings, guest counts, they are down. Very nice. All right. The average guest count nationwide was 131, which I don't know. That still sounds like a lot of freaking people, doesn't it? 131.
Yeah, it does.
That was the number in 2024. It was 184 in 2006, though. So there's this trend called micro weddings, 50 or fewer guests. They made up 18% of weddings last year. Pretty interesting. Cutting the count. If you're looking to save money, the old tricks don't really make that much of a difference, right? You'd try a Friday wedding to save money, a Sunday wedding. It saves a little. But cutting the guest count is the best way to save money. And when you think about it, like the problem, here's the problem with cutting the guest count. Like, especially if you're, maybe it's because people are getting married when they're older and they don't care what their mom or dad wanted. But like my parents wanted all these cousins, all this and that. And you're like, I don't know. I'm glad they came. We had a decent size wedding. How about that said? I think that's enough. That's enough. I'm so distracted. But all right, one more. Do you have an idea that could make the city of Stillwater even better than it already is? Mary Devine.
Stillwater, Minnesota is one of the most underrated cities in America.
Hard to argue with that. I love Stillwater. Mary Devine in the Pioneer Press. And I love that the Stillwater Area Community Foundation does this. They throw out $10,000 and they say, give me your idea. Civic-minded, open to individuals, businesses, groups, government, school, whatever. Last year, Union Art Alley won. They got $10,000 to transform a sort of neglected, dopey downtown alley into a celebration of public art. So you got to benefit a community in the Stillwater area. So Bayport counts, Lake Elmo, Marina on St. Croix, etc. And you could win $10,000. It's pretty cool. Come up with some good ideas, people. We'll talk about the winner when they decide. You have until September, so you have a little bit of time. It's 5:30. We are live at Target Field. About an hour away from game time, 30 minutes from pregame here on the home of the Twins. We're going to talk to our friend Dave Schwartz in just a minute. Schwartz on Sports, next on CCO.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, just within the last 20 minutes or so, the president said on his Truth Social account that Israel and Iran have agreed to what he describes as a complete and total ceasefire. It'll be phased in over the next 12 hours. And the president, on his Donald Trump, real Donald Trump's Truth Social account, said the war will be considered ended. He would like to call it the 12-day war. I don't know that.
For marketing purposes, or what do we do?
Yes. He said, on the assumption that everything works as it should, which it will, I would like to congratulate both countries, Israel and Iran, on having the stamina, courage, and intelligence to end what should be called the 12-day war. It's a war that could have gone on for years and destroyed the Middle East, but it didn't. It never will. God bless Israel. God bless Iran.
There's something you don't hear every day.
I will say this. Like, I am very, we should be very pleased with this. A targeted, direct, immediate United States response helped, if this holds, put an end to what really could have been a more devastating conflict. And also, Trump has to trump it up. Everything has to be Trumpy, right? Like, do we have to God bless Iran? Didn't we just bomb their nuclear? I don't know, man. We live in some crazy times, but the result of this, I think, is very good. If this holds, this is very good news. So CBS covering this as well, but I wanted to give you the latest. Let's do Dave Schwartz. All right, Dave Schwartz is with us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Dave, we are at Target Field, where I feel like most of the youth baseball players of Minnesota are right behind me. There must be some sort of nonsense going on the field, because there are kids in uniform everywhere. They are so excited. It's part of what I love about baseball. It's really fun.
And this is it, having those nights is so important for the longevity and viability of Major League Baseball. Kudos to the Twins for doing it, because that's how you get fans. You get them at the grassroots level. There's all sorts of research that shows you if you know, the first jersey a kid puts on is the team that he's going to root, he or she will root for. And these kids will remember the Twins and baseball, and it'll be fans for a lifetime because of this experience.
It's pretty fun stuff. Pretty fun stuff. There, I mean, we need that fun, because let's be real. It's been a rough stretch. I mean, we're talking just sort of a crazy losing streak here, right?
Yeah, I mean, to get run out like they did this weekend, to have, you know, their big numbers, you got really rough. You know, it's interesting, I think, that Rocco is now at this point in the season starting the opening pitcher bit, which usually happens near the end of the season. I you know, everyone's got their opinion on this. I don't love it. Sometimes it works. I have not seen it work a ton.
And the opening pitcher is where you get some bullpen guy to come in and throw the first inning.
Yeah, it basically allows your starting pitcher to only go, you know, if all goes well, only go through the lineup, you know, two times at most, maybe three. But to me, that says that there's a bigger problem there. If you're worried about your starting pitcher the third time he goes through the lineup, you know, and successful teams have starting pitchers that regularly go 7-8 innings. That's the way this is done, and the Twins have had this issue. Usually this is something, in my experience, that doesn't happen, I think, until later, or at least in the second half of the season. So that's a little concerning to me. Listen, Rocco knows more about, you know, forgot more about baseball than I know, so I'm not going to necessarily second guess him. To me, it's just an interesting sign when you're pulling that out at this point in the season.
Do you read anything into it, Dan, when you the use of the starting pitcher?
The use of the opener?
The opener?
I mean, it's an attempt to try and shake things up a little bit with your pitching staff. Your starters have been struggling, clearly, and as Dave said, this is an attempt to try and take a little bit of pressure off of them by saying we don't need you to go through their lineup more than a couple of times. But, you know, like he said, you're not using this because your starters are pitching well.
Yes.
And so what happened the other night, you know, Danny Coulon got out there, but he gave up a run, and then Festa came in and got lit up anyway. So,
yeah.
I mean, they got to do something.
The Brewers,
I'm not sure how effective this
the
really
Brewers
is.
The Brewers scored 35 runs in three games.
Yeah.
I mean, that is rough, and it's rough this early. You know, the first official day of summer, the first full day was Saturday. So we're really just getting this thing started, even though a fair chunk of the season is played. But you think about it, like, I don't know how much when the president of baseball operations is also the president of business operations, at a certain point, you got to be a little worried about the business operations. When you're getting blown out 9-0 and 17-6, I mean, that doesn't make you want to come on down the old ballpark.
Hurts the walk-up.
Yeah,
and it's also not good when it's the team right across the border. That tends to be a bit of a, tough. That's an even tougher pill to swallow. Because, I mean, not that they're necessarily competing for fans, but sometimes in the small markets where you can get both, you certainly don't want them to go the other way because they want to root for the winner.
Yeah, it is tough. And it's tough to know what to do. I mean, the players... You know, we were talking to Danny Gladden, and he's like, you know, everybody always wants to blame the front office. But ultimately, like, these are the same players that were playing well. And so the players are just not playing well.
It's a very long season, but ultimately the most important thing is you can't let, and I forget if maybe it was which manager it was, but he would always say, like, one loss isn't bad, but you just can't string a bunch of them together at any point in the season. If you're looking at four or five six losses, those kind of things, you know, especially when you could miss a postseason by a game or two. You look back at the season, you go, yep, that time that we went in the tank and nobody could hit, or we couldn't pitch, or, you know, we couldn't get runners around to home plate. You look back at those times and go, well, what the heck happened? Because then, a month earlier, everything was going great. And so it is a long season, but, staying on the good side of those streaks is absolutely critical.
Oklahoma City wins the NBA championship last night.
Yeah.
Obviously the Halliburton injury is, I don't know, it's a tough pill for Indiana fans to swallow.
Yeah.
Tyrese Halliburton, he went down so early. He might be,
yep.
It's easy to second guess. Should he have been playing? But go ahead and second guess. Should he have been playing?
Good luck. Good luck telling a guy that if he can walk, that you're not going to play in Game 7 of the NBA Finals. There is no chance that, look at the Stanley Cup. Once the Stanley Cup's over, you've got guys who've been playing with broken ribs and fingers and, everything. Good luck telling it. People forget, they can be told all they want. The coaches, the front office, they can suggest to players that they can't play. But ultimately, if that player wants to play, they're going to let him on the field, unless it's, or the court, unless it's a concussion. So good luck telling him he's not going to play. Of course he's going to try. But they were only, I think they were down by, 1 point at halftime, without him. So, but Oklahoma City is, they were the best team in the NBA wire to wire. They're so stacked. And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is incredible. Chet Holmgren was great. Minnesota's own Chet Holmgren.
One of us. We are the champions. We did it, Dave.
I remember seeing him play at Minnehaha Academy as a seventh grader.
Oh.
And we were
How
there.
How do you think that moment of you doing a story on Minnehaha Academy?
It wasn't even on him. Wasn't even on him. It was on Jalen Suggs at the time.
Scrub. That guy's a scrub.
Yeah.
You have an off-camera moment where you kind of maybe inspired Holmgren on to greatness?
I wish I did. I don't even think I saw. I don't think we even talked because he was working out off to the side.
You're not even a good enough liar to just claim that you did.
He wouldn't know me if he passed me in a room with only us.
Which is why you could make up a really good story about how you said something.
I remember looking at him and thinking, gosh, he is tall and skinny.
Yeah.
And, look at him now. He's tall, skinny, and an NBA champion.
Still tall and skinny.
So good for him.
Yeah. Yep. You called it, I would say.
I did. I called it. I knew he was going to be. Yeah. I remember walking out of the gym saying, that kid's going to be an NBA champion someday. I remember it very well.
I remember it, too. I think you called me up and told me
about
it.
I'm sure I did.
Yeah.
I said, Jason, someday you're going to be on radio. And I'm going to be out of the business, but I'm telling you right now, this kid, Chet Holmgren, is going to be an NBA champion.
Yeah, that's how I remember it. Dave Schwartz with us. Stand by, Dave. We're going to break. We'll come back with more Schwartz on Sports live at
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good field here on CC.
Let's take the current temp of your Minnesota Twins. Brought to you by Chef IQ Sense. Get your wireless meat thermometer now at chefiq.com.
Oh, Dave, I know you're going to be excited to give the temperature of the Twins right now.
I just looked up what it was in Antarctica.
And the temperature, that's about where we're at.
Minus 53. Thank you very much. Thank you.
You got a rim shot, even. Yeah, there. I don't think they could be colder. They could not be. It turns around with one win. Do you know how you get to a 10-game winning streak?
Got to win the first one.
That's right. That's a Dan Cook saying, I think. Right. I don't want to steal your material.
If you want to win two, first you got to win one.
It's pretty good.
That's even better.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I screwed it up, of course, but I got the spirit.
That was a great setup, though. Yeah, you had the idea.
This weekend we had a graduation party for young Samuel, and it was 150,000 degrees, I think.
Oh.
And Dan Cook,
give or take.
Dan Cook was there. He did a whole. He filled in for me on Friday, Dave.
I did.
And asked the people what he should get Sam as a present.
Oh, I love this.
Yeah, I think the best suggestion was a monogrammed hairbrush that just said DeBrusha. And Sam's got a great head of hair.
True.
So, I thought that was very appropriate. It was either that or it was a t-shirt that said Drive Time with Dan Cook.
Should be good. That's pretty funny.
That. I don't know that Sam would really appreciate that so much.
Probably not. No.
I would.
Pretty hilarious.
Yeah, it was great. People were great.
I love it. Well, Dan was there, and I know he was supposed to talk to two people, and I don't know. Everybody was telling him what to do. I just figure if someone shows up, I don't care if you're there for, like, 2 minutes. It's nice.
You know, there are some folks that just let people live and let live, and then there's some folks that, you know, may do the news on a regular basis that like to bully other people into doing what they think they should do.
Uh-oh.
There's etiquette at a grad party. Like, you have to, if you're going to eat a certain amount of food, you have to stay a certain amount of time, right? Like, you can't just... I've done it. I've gone to grad, not any times recently, I've gone to a grad party simply because we didn't feel like cooking dinner that night.
Yeah. I've
done it.
You know what? I'm not going to lie. I went to Sam's girlfriend's grad party because her dad is a cook and works at restaurants, and I wanted to eat his food.
That's a great reason.
Yeah. Yeah, it was delicious. There was pork, of course.
Of course it was. The kid doesn't care. He doesn't care how many people are there.
Hell no.
As long as the card has a check in it.
That's right.
That's it.
Sam gave me the cash that he got, and Dan and I had to go to the bank today because kids don't know what to do with cash. He was like, I don't know what to do with this. I'm like, I'll take it to the bank. It's fine.
They have no idea. They have no idea how to what to do with it. We've had this conversation so many times with my son because he keeps it in a pile in a drawer in his room. And I'm like, are you saving in case there's a depression? Like, let's go to the bank.
Dave, we got to go. We got to go. Thanks, buddy. Twins baseball's next.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.